Hi, I'm Julie Stacey, and welcome to the eBiomedicine podcast. On today's episode, we will discuss an exciting trend of research in the digital health field, how deep learning models can help to detect hidden clinical correlates. We've just published a fascinating article on this topic entitled Deep Learning Evaluation of Biomarkers from Echocardiogram Videos in the November issue, and our New York-based editor, Pierre Nolou, had the opportunity to speak with the senior authors. I hope you enjoy the interview featuring James Zhou, assistant professor of biomedical data science at Stanford University, and David Ouyang, cardiologist at Cedars-Sinai.
To start us off, may I ask you to give us a brief overview of the AI applications in cardiology imaging?
Yeah, maybe I'm happy to take a first step at that and then David can chime in. The cardiology is actually a really great application of AI, right? Because first, it's very commonly done, right? So there are millions of echocardiograms and these kinds of data being collected every year, right, in the US and around the world. So they're very prevalent. And currently, it's really a lot of manual process that goes into interpreting or assessing these videos, these kinds of data. Right. And it requires a lot of expertise and also can be quite time-consuming for the clinicians because they have to often look through the entire video, try to identify the individual frames, to trace out those frames, and then do all sorts of other calculations on top of that. Right. So that's both time-consuming and also can be highly variable across different physicians, different cardiologists. Right. And that's where I think really motivated a lot of our work in trying to develop AI to address some of these questions, right? I think these questions are very well suited for our computer vision in particular, for computer vision AI algorithms, which is a subset of AI algorithms that are really trying to develop deep neural networks to look at these images or look at the videos and to automatically assess the phenotypes of the patients, right? In our case, we want to, in some of our previous works, we want to assess the ejection fractions, which is one of the common measurements of cardiac condition. In this more recent work with David, we're trying to assess, going beyond ejection fraction, but to assess different laboratory values.
Yeah, I would frame it as there's such an exciting amount of opportunity here that can be bucketed in two ways. One, how do we actually do things that humans do, but do it better with either more precision or more accuracy? And two, can we do things that clinicians can't do? Are there things that are additional phenotypes or features that humans can't see, but would be really interesting if we can use kind of the novel technologies to really capture?
The work you just published falls into this second bucket, as you're trying to predict lab results from echocardiograms, which is a task beyond clinicians' ability. So what made you think that this can be done?
Yeah. As a cardiologist, we're really trained to identify and diagnose things based off of imaging. But I'll be the first to admit that I think that there are hidden patterns and new findings that happen over time. People recognize new patterns and many other features that maybe initially with the advent of an imaging modality wasn't previously there. And I think that deep learning is such a computer vision is such an exciting place because it really helps us find opportunities that maybe humans have already missed. The reason why we thought this was possible is that there's already a robust literature on cardiac diagnostics, often in EKG setting, where EKGs can identify subtle phenotypes of either future outcomes or of risk prognostication or even diagnoses that people haven't really used the EKG for before. And our thought is that with ultrasounds, which is an even richer, denser modality, there must be additional information that can be captured.
And I'll just add on top of what David already mentioned is that this is why this is so exciting to us, both as a scientific discovery and in addition to like a clinical engineering application, right? Because the scientific discovery part is that it's not obvious ahead of time, right, that there would be enough information in these videos, right, in the cardiac ultrasound videos that can reliably assess all of these other laboratory values, which are not often associated with our heart conditions, right? And sort of the finding here is that there is actually enough information, right? At least enough information that the computer vision AI algorithms could extract from the videos. And that could potentially lead to maybe a broader way to think about how different organs and different parts of the body are connected.
An often heard criticism from the clinical side is that AI methods are a bit of a black box. As a clinician, David, do you understand what the algorithm is doing?
I would say our paper is really exciting because it's really capturing a lot of relationships that clinicians, as a cardiologist myself, I don't necessarily see. Like, I would say that there are many lab values and biomarkers that are transiently or partially related to the heart that now we see have a really strong relationship when identified with computer vision. There are certain biomarkers, such as the NT-proBNP, which we know is associated with heart failure and heart dysfunction, so that we have a really strong sense that this should be something that's captured in the imaging itself. But even things like anemia, hemoglobin, BNP, or BUN, there's many things that are outside of the heart that, you know, to be perfectly honest, I don't have as clear of a sense of what are the features that the algorithm is detecting.
And this is also where we did a bunch of interesting experiments in trying to understand what the algorithm is looking at. Right? I mean, the algorithm behind the scene is really a particular kind of neural network is basically scanning across the space, right? So across different spatial locations in the heart. It's also scanning across time, you know, different temporal patterns in the video, right? And it's basically looking for both spatial and temporal patterns that then can be correlated with all of these biomarkers that David mentioned, right? And one way that one approach that we use to get a better insight into what the algorithm's doing is by basically doing different ablation studies. Because you can imagine that instead of feeding it the whole video, right, if you crop out or mask out different parts of the video, right, maybe you mask out this part, this chamber, or you mask out this other chamber, then you can see, okay, how does the algorithm's prediction or assessment change with these different maskings? And that gave us a lot of insights into what regions of the heart and what temporal component it's paying the most attention to.
James, you published a review with FeeBiomedicine in May, talking about the importance of diversity in AI research. How important, therefore, is diversity for your own work?
Yes, thank you for that question. So I think this is a really important topic, especially when we're thinking about taking the AI algorithms, you know, from research into really deployment on patients, which is really our main goal. Right? We really want to make sure that these algorithms work reliably across different conditions, different settings, and also across different patient populations, right? So not necessarily just at academic hospitals, but also across diverse conditions. And I think that's really a very high bar that we really want AI algorithms to pass, because we want to them to work well in these quite sensitive applications. And to do that, I mean, I think there's still a lot of ways that we can further improve how we're currently training and evaluating these medical AI systems, right? So I think right now, there's still not a lot of data on how well these algorithms work in, you know, different ethnic groups, right, or across different conditions, right? Which is why for us, it's really important for us to, in our work, to try to evaluate the algorithm across different locations as much as possible, right, across different hospitals, or also to stratify how well the algorithm works across different, you know, demographic subgroups, right, different gender, ethnic, or age combinations, to really make sure that, you know, the algorithms, these computer vision AI systems, do not have any major biases or artifacts.
David, in which clinical situations do you think such a method as the one you propose could be useful?
As I think of kind of algorithms, I think there's a couple of major use cases. The first is ultrasound or echocardiography. Most conventionally right now is being done in echo labs, where there's a technician and a cardiologist reads it later in the day. But there's increased interest in point-of-care ultrasound. So colleagues in emergency medicine, internal medicine, critical care, many other modalities are seeing that there is significant value in doing ultrasound images, particularly ultrasound images of the heart, so that in these kind of either less resource settings or places where time is really critical, algorithms might have a tremendous value and tremendous use in affecting clinical care. The second modality or framework, I would say, is that it can be really used in a screening setting. While echocardiograms definitely are more expensive than many lab tests, we know that oftentimes it's disparate. Someone might get the imaging test but not have the lab test, or might have the lab test but not get the imaging test. And if we already have the imaging test, why not capture higher value from it? Large academic centers do kind of tens of thousands of these tests every year already, and if we can get additional value from something that we're already doing, it's really an opportunity to affect patient care.
And both settings that David mentioned, I think, are really good examples of the potential power of these kind of medical AI tools to make medicine or treatments more accessible, right? And also to potentially to reduce disparity across different resource settings.
And what will be the next steps of this project?
This is really opens up a door to a lot of exciting research, right? Now that we've identified that there are a lot richer information, right, in these ultrasound videos, right, than people have previously thought, right? So that opens up the possibility of potentially extracting even more features, more information from these kind of very rich imaging modalities, right, and potentially doing all sorts of other outcome predictions.
One thing I think is incredibly interesting to us is the idea of using or leveraging large imaging databases like the echocardiography database to find relevant patients, right? I think for this project, this was on lab values, but this could potentially be incredibly useful for rare diseases or even features that humans don't necessarily or overlook over time. So that identifying patients that might benefit from certain therapies or identifying patients that have really different outcomes from others, I think are an incredibly useful and interesting way that I think we'd love to push this in the future.
And then along those lines, I think we also really want to make this a resource for the broader community, right? For both the research and clinical community, which is why, you know, together with David and our students, we released all of the code, right, we use for this model and also for our previous EchoNet Dynamics model. So we also released a lot of the data. So I think we actually released one of the largest, maybe the largest data sets of publicly available cardiac ultrasound videos, right, along with the corresponding annotations. And we hope that that can be really a broad resource for people to advance this field.
To conclude, would you have any advice to share regarding developing successful collaboration between computer scientists and clinicians?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's that's been one of my favorite collaborations, partly because, you know, it's one that I feel like I have learned a lot from David throughout this experience. Right, I didn't know very much about cardiology before, but I've always been interested in thinking about how can we take these AI tools, you know, from research into actual patients in the clinical deployment. And I think David has done, he's really a perfect example of someone who has expertise in both areas on the clinical side, right, and seeing the patients and also having the expertise on the AI side. So it's just been a really great collaboration.
Yeah, I was going to say, this project all started when I was a cardiology fellow and I was a postdoc in James's lab. And this really speaks to kind of the really unique opportunity at the intersection of kind of computer science and data science and healthcare, where at Stanford, these places were kind of the building where the CS and the machine learning happens is across the street from the hospital. And that was a really unique opportunity for me to really learn from James as well as the graduate students in his lab. I think that going forward, this is something that I think that every institution is hoping to cultivate more, but often the bottlenecks are essentially how to incentivize releasing data sets and releasing code and allowing for really people to push this field forward, because I do really think that this is kind of the wave and the direction of the future.
And that was James Zhou from Stanford University and David Ouyang from Cedars-Sinai. At eBiomedicine, we acknowledge the growing importance of digital health in clinical research. And to highlight the most promising topics, we put together a collection of some of our favorite eBiomedicine digital health papers, and I encourage you to check it out on our homepage. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next month. Stay safe out there.